Welcome to The Deadline. I'm Laura, your host and founder of the New Jersey Ghost Hunter Society. Of course, I'm here with Brian Sant, our NJGHS tech guru and producer of our little show. How are you, Brian?
Yes, very little show.
Hey, you know, I think we're doing pretty good even producing these shows, considering the coming off the tail end of the Halloween chaos and so forth. But you know what? I meant to this launched couple weeks ago, in fact. Jeff Belanger, the mayor of Ghost.
Jeff who?
Yes. Remember him? Our buddy.
A slave driver.
No. No. He works. Believe me. He asks nothing of anyone else than, you know, he's always doing three times the amount of work than what he asks of people. Trust me. But anyway, he launched a new website via his ghostvillage.com for kids and parents and educators. So I thought this was really cool, and I meant to talk about it when I saw the press release come out, and then I got discombobulated with everything else going on with Halloween and everything. But I definitely want to direct people's attention. This was back October 9th, actually. He put the press release out. And it says, ghostvillage.com, the web's largest supernatural resource for ghost evidence, pictures, recordings, and research, today announced the launch of kids.ghostvillage.com, the first paranormal website designed for kids, parents, and educators on how to talk about ghosts, how kids can safely get involved in paranormal investigation, and how educators, I love that now, they're no longer teachers. The hell? Why do they have to be an educator? What difference does it make? Well, is teacher a bad word?
Is stewardess a bad word?
Well, a teacher? That's not... Stewardess implies there's the S. That means it's female.
All right. But steward.
Teacher is asexual, right? It's just... Male or female can be a teacher.
Well, maybe they thought the word teacher was too demeaning. They wanted to educate, not just teach. Which is
it's basically the same thing. This is like people... Educators. I remember when I was married to one. He'd say, well, I'm an educator. I'm like, you're a teacher. Why is teacher so... Any teachers out there, you know, send me an email. Give me a clue.
Laura, you're digressing again.
I know, but it's so stupid. Anyway, on how educators...
Educators.
These people can use ghosts in the classroom as a teaching tool. So they're teaching. It's the same thing.
Well, you know... Who wrote the press release?
Jeff, probably.
Well, then you should get on his case.
No, he's doing the whole PC thing. I guess because it's so politically correct to be an educator.
Well, no, you should get on his case because he used educators there and teaching over here.
Right, so it's an educational tool. See, I would have said how teachers can use this as an educational tool, not how educators can use it as whatever. The launch comes on the 9-year anniversary of ghostvillage.com. And here, see, we often teach our kids that ghosts aren't real, said Jeff Belanger, ghostvillage.com founder and author of the new children's book, Who's Haunting the White House? But kids aren't so sure. Many of us have been interested in the paranormal since our own childhood, so it makes sense to have a place for kids to learn about investigating, for parents to take an active role in their kids' interest, and for educators to see the value in incorporating ghosts in the classroom, from teaching history to learning about the power of ghosts in writing and storytelling. Now, let me tell you, this has come up on several occasions when I'm presenting at schools. Kids, and I agree with these children, if teachers had incorporated the paranormal in history, I would have paid attention. I would have definitely learned more about the Civil War had they told me about the ghosts that came from the Civil War versus just the boring history.
You know, current history, you know, is kind of probably boring then.
Oh, current events? Uh-huh. Oh, I can't watch the news. I am one of those people that just absorbs that negativity. It does not just pass through me and keep going. I just pull it in and hold it, and it just... So I can't watch the news. I'll hold on to that. It ruins my whole day, my whole night. So it's like, forget it. Anyway, so kids.ghostvillage.com. I just realized village is spelled wrong on here, but it's too late. And that's not my fault. I copied and pasted.
Oh, yeah, like anybody out there listening would have known that unless she said it.
Well, now if they look at the press release, they'll say, wow, Ghost Village was spelled wrong.
Poor Jeff.
No. I mean, I just noticed
Jeff,
it.
This is all Laura, not me.
No, I'm just saying. But I think it's cool that Junior Ghost Hunters, which we have the T-shirts from the New Jersey Ghost Hunters that say Junior Ghost Hunter on them. Junior Ghost Hunters tips and forums on how to conduct an investigation and the chance to file their field reports for publication on the website. For parents, this is awesome. For parents, the website offers a resource on how to discuss the topic of ghosts with their children and how to handle kids in a potentially haunted environment. The Ghosts in the Classroom section includes sample lesson plans, recommended reading, and interviews with children's book authors. This is great. Isn't this... What's wrong?
Well, nothing. We'll get there.
What?
We'll get there.
I'm not getting there. I'm done. Why? What's wrong?
Oh, because I think they have another misspelling.
Where?
The next paragraph after that one.
The advisory boards of kids.ghostvillage.com include children's book authors, professional educators, and a psychologist who help vet... The content and...
Maybe vent?
Kids. No, vet. I know what he's saying. That, yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought it was a misspelling.
Like if you would be vetted for something. It don't ask me what it means, but I know what he... It is a word. It's not misspelled.
Sorry, I'm just, miseducator.
No, not me. Not me. Who helped vet the content?
Well, anyway.
Parents. But anyway, so it's spelled right. You know, so this is very good because I know Ann Palagrudo, she used to be with South Jersey Ghost Research. She moved over to Philadelphia and started her own, like, Philadelphia Ghost Researchers Club, but she also was very in tune with the kids, and she was one of the forerunners. I think she was the forerunner to have a junior ghost hunter type program, mm-hmm. you know, for kids and school-age children. And... But, you know, like anything female, we can knock our heads up against a wall and it just goes nowhere fast. And as soon as somebody with the dumb stick comes along, it's like, bam, it makes perfect sense and it's right there. What a great idea. And I'm not slighting Jeff at all. Please don't take it that way. I'm just saying it's a shame because Anne had done this 5-6 years ago. She had a junior ghost hunters thing and was really helping kids and stuff. But... She just didn't have the notoriety or the support system. She definitely didn't have the support. Once she left South Jersey because she moved across the river and went over to PA, it was like she was starting everything from scratch, and it was pretty hard, you know. So I'm glad that someone like Jeff, who has that power and that notoriety, came along and put this together so that way, you know, kids, parents, educators, teachers have a place to go to address the paranormal and ghostly topics, as it were. So, don't you think that's cool?
That's very cool.
So, thank you, Jeff, for doing that. It's awesome. Let's move along to meeting announcements.
Oh, why not?
Because there's only one. Let's see. Central Jersey Division will not have a meeting, because by the time the show uploads, it'll be after their meeting, which took place on November 5th. So, we don't do meetings in December to honor everybody's family time for the holidays. But we do have the North Jersey having their meeting on November 18th in the Community Center in Hackettstown, located at 293 Main Street. That runs from 6:30 to 8 p.m., and team leader Dina Tirico will be there to lead the meeting. All meetings are free and open to the public to attend. If you have any questionable photographs, what have you, you might want to bring them to the meeting for our Share and Scare segment and have them reviewed for authenticity. I should mention, too, if you need to buy any copies of my book, Ghost Hunting New Jersey, and you don't want to pay for shipping and have to deal with that, you know, you can always arrange to, if you're going to be at the North Jersey meeting, send me an email, and you can save some money, and I'll make sure that Dina has the books, and if you want them autographed, I'll do that, too, or whatever. And you can just pick it right up from the meeting, okay? And after this break, we'll be right back. Do you have what it takes to be a ghost hunter? Are you fascinated with the paranormal? Then why not take your interest to the next level and join the New Jersey Ghost Hunter Society? For a $20 lifetime membership fee, you'll receive training on our cemetery hunts,
Get to participate on investigative teams for private investigations and receive discounts on books we sell. Members also get the reduced rate on special events we offer throughout the year. You can PayPal right from the homepage of www.njghs.net or send your check or money order payable to Ghost Hunters to P.O. Box 8018, Parsippany, New Jersey, 07054. Happy haunting.
I say, Sean B., I've been thinking about all the things necessary to produce a proper paranormal broadcast.
Do tell, Nathan S., what are these vital qualities?
Empathy, commitment, quiet dignity, and self-respect.
Indeed! What a shame we don't have any of those traits!
Oh yeah, the Ghostman and Demon Hunter show is rocking its way on the supernatural scene.
It's drive-time paranormal broadcasting without the driving or the timing. Just go to www.ghostandemon.com.
Think you know what goes bump in the night? You ain't heard nothing yet.
Each week we'll be bringing you the best and the worst kept secrets in the paranormal community.
Yeah, us, the Ghostman and Demon Hunter, Sunday from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
www.ghostandemon.com. The Ghostman and Demon Hunter show is beyond the normal broadcast.
Now's your chance to take what should be your last ride and get out alive. Morbid Mobile Tours lets you climb in through the suicide door or end loader and head out to the infamous Shades of Death Road in Warren County. While you're seated in the very space where dead bodies took the ride to their final resting place, you'll hear the grim tales of ghosts, murder, and disease. Jezebel is a beautiful 1983 Cadillac hearse who served her time in funeral processions and now is dying to take you with her on this haunted trail. Tours are $25 per victim and depart from the Hackettstown train station. To book your tour, visit Morbid Mobile Tours page by clicking the license plate on the homepage of the njghs.net website. Morbid Mobile Tours, we're waiting to take you away. And now it's time for a Parashare. Do you have a paranormal experience or ghost encounter to tell? Then send it in an email to thedeadline@njghs.net. For each Parashare you submit and we read on the show, you'll receive one credit. One credit gets you membership in the NJGHS. It's a $20 value. If you send in 10 Parashares, you have a $75 value of a natal chart, if you so desire one. And I'm just speeding through this because I repeat it every week. So, you know, and it's even listed on the deadline page, right? Of the NJGHS.net site.
I guess.
Yeah, it's all spieled out there as well. So let's just cut to the chase. This week, I swiped a ghost story, as shared by Clarissy Press's PR gal, Kara, on America's Haunted Road Trip Forum, Tell Your Own Ghost Story. So here you go. Kara writes, I used to go to summer camp every year when I was younger, and I remember the one summer that stood out for more than just the tornado that tore through the camp. Wow. My best friend Katie and I always went to camp together. And this year we had brought two other friends, our twin friends, Mindy and Mallory. Katie and I were awake late one night, making mischief, I'm sure, when we both saw from across the cabin a greenish glow hovering above Mindy on the lower bunk of their bunk beds. It had a human shape to it, this glow. Naturally, we freaked out, started screaming, woke everyone up, and then got in big trouble. Being 11 is so hard sometimes, right? This is only one of several times I will swear up and down that I've seen a ghost or some other apparition. I have a much better story that will scare the pants off of you, and if it doesn't, then you're not a real person. That's to come soon. So, very nice job, Kara. So, people, that's an example of a parashare, so see, she thought back to when she was 11 and being at camp and what she had experienced paranormally. And that's all you have to do is send it to the deadline at njghs.net.
All right, and now for our interview with author and researcher Stephen LaChance. Stephen LaChance is an extreme haunting specialist, author, speaker, talk show radio host, and executive producer. He founded the Missouri Paranormal Research and co-founded the Paranormal Task Force after living through an extreme haunting himself, along with his family and friends. He details his frightening experience in his new book, The Uninvited, The True Story of the Union Screaming House. Back in October of 2006, Fear House premiered as the first show of the third season of Discovery Channel's A Haunting. This show featured Stephen and the story of the Union Haunting. In addition, he has been interviewed and filmed for inclusion in two paranormal documentaries. In fact, last October, 2007, he worked with the Booth Brothers for their production of Children of the Grave. Welcome to our show, Stephen LaChance.
Oh, what a great introduction. Thank you.
Oh, thank you for being here. This is so good. I read your book. I don't know if I sent you an email. I don't know if you got it, but I read your book in one whole day.
Oh, my gosh.
I couldn't stop. I was just like, got up. I had, you know, one of those things in the morning where I woke up very early. And I thought, let me just start reading this because I know we're going to be talking on the show, and I want to make sure I've read the book. And I fell asleep for a little bit, not because of the book, but I was up at 4 in the morning, and I read till 6, and then I thought, oh, let me just take a nap. And then I went right into this wild dream, and I was telling Brian about it on one of our other shows, and I said it was so weird because I said in the book he has 3 kids, a daughter and 2 sons. And I said, I went into this dream where I had a daughter and 2 kids, and I said they weren't my 2 sons or anything. There were no kids I had never seen before. And I said, that's when I woke up from that. I said, ooh, this is a good book. Whenever a book gets like into your dreams like that and starts
right.
making it happen, I was like, oh. So then I ended up finishing it. Actually, I knew I had to get out and get some exercise, so I went to the cemetery. So I'm walking in the cemetery to do exercise as well as finish reading the book. But it was so good. I've told everybody on the show, and when I've been out places, I'm like, you've got to get this book. So I really loved it, and you know, I've got a couple questions I'm sure other people have asked you. You're probably sick to death. It's probably the same question you've heard a million times.
Oh, you'd be surprised. These people come up with different things all the time.
Okay. So, you know, in the book, I think I can remember. Now, I lent it to Brian when I was done because I told him, you should read this. He's me on the show. And at last count, like when it ended, your friend had actually, the woman who was living in the house with her husband, and their kids, they were like a combined, you know, fused family, if you will. Like,
right.
You know. Now, did she actually get out of there?
Yes, she did. You know, one of the things that I did is, near the end of it, I said to her, because they really couldn't afford to move.
Yeah.
And they're in this situation, which was a horrible, horrible situation. Mm. And I said to her, you know, I said, this landlord isn't getting anything. What you need to do is you actually need to, you know, I actually told her quit paying her rent, you know, because she was renting. And I said, that's going to give you 3 months. I knew the Missouri law.
Oh.
And I knew it would give her 3 months, you know, to find something else, to save that money so they could move.
Oh.
And that's what they did in the
smart.
End. Yeah, well, you know, you know, and a lot of people don't, you get the question a lot of times, you know, why would someone stay in a place like this? They never think of the economics of things.
And that's like,
you know,
the first and foremost thing that would just hold you trapped, I would
right.
think, you know, is because it takes money to make money. It takes money to get out of a place. And, you
right.
know, and even if you're a model tenant and you actually have a decent landlord and you ever get your security deposit back,
right.
that always comes a month or two down the road. It's not going to help you when you need to actually move.
Absolutely, you know, so it was a little dishonest, I guess, in a way, but, you know, if you consider the hell that the family was going through under the guise of this landlord who knew exactly what was going on, it was the best move to make.
Mm-hmm. Have you
there is no Missouri protection for renters at all.
Oh, really?
No.
I know here in Jersey, it's, you know, basically, having been like a landlord briefly, it's near to impossible to get someone out once they're
oh, really?
In. It takes like, you know, they could go for 6 months without paying the rent, and then, you know, you've gone to court, you've proven, you've done everything you can, you know, and then finally, like about 6 month mark, they'll be evicted. But, you know,
well, in Missouri, there's very limited rights of the tenant, and that's one of the things is she, you know, the landlord never had to disclose to the potential tenants what went on previously. And that's one of the guises that gets people in there. They don't realize what they're getting into until they're in there.
Wow.
Which is kind of sad.
Yeah, have you been back there while there's new tenants living there, and have they experienced this stuff?
There's tenants living there right now who were actually flooded out of their home in a major flood here in the Missouri area. And the Red Cross stepped in, and, you know, doing what the Red Cross does was helping them to find a home. And unfortunately, this is the home that they pick for them. So, you know, it's really bad luck on their part. And they're experiencing things right now. They're very scared. You know, it's kind of strange. I hear from them when they move in. A lot of times they'll tell me, I don't believe in ghosts, you know. But I usually hear from them when they're running out in the middle of the night, you know, after I can't really help them too much, which is kind of sad.
How do they find out about you if the landlord's not saying anything?
Well, it's because it's become such, you know, after the Discovery Show, this house has become such a draw within the community. Everybody in the community knows it now. So she almost, you know, the landlord almost has to rent outside of the community and bring them in, you know. But once they get in there, you know, the neighbors tell them, you know. They'll have knocks on the door. I know this certain tenant had a young kid come to the door and tell her. And then she went out on the internet and she was like, oh my gosh, I'm living in a haunted house. She had already started having some experiences before she found out, so.
Wow. It's not just haunt. I mean, I've lived in a haunted house and...
Right.
Yeah, that's tolerable, but what that place is it's like demonic. It's frightening.
It is demonic. You know, I don't throw the terminology around because, you know, whatever your belief system is, you know, most people believe in positive and negative or good and evil, you know, so put that in whatever name you want on it, but it's the worst of places.
Yeah, reading the book, I just, what happened, your poor friend went through, I mean, she was literally getting possessed.
Literally. You know, I saw this nice woman who was the neighborhood staple. I mean, she was the mother of all the kids in the neighborhood. All the kids would gravitate to her. Literally meet you at the door with a cup of coffee and a piece of cake.
Yeah.
And I saw this woman in a period of time turn into a monster.
Oh.
And it was very, very hard to watch that, especially, you know, there was a friendship that developed there. And to watch your friend go through something like that, and to be the one on the outside, the one that, you know, I was the only one to help. And no one else understood. It was very hard. I felt like times like Chicken Little running around saying the sky is falling.
And nobody will listen.
Right, you know, until it physically started attacking her, and it became so obvious, you know, the bite marks, the scratches. I mean... when I did take her to the hospital one time, her blood pressure was 196 over 207 or 209, something like that. Her pulse was at 45 and was dropping. But what was strange about it is she would sit there and talk, you know, like you and I are talking.
Wow.
You know, and the nurse is looking at me and she's like, you know, she's dying. You know, had you not got her here when you did, she would be dead. You know, but it was really strange. And then, you know, through the period of time in the hospital, so at one point she tore a payphone off the wall and threw it across the room. Just a whole lot of stuff.
That's so trying to watch someone go through that.
And try to find them help. Yeah. And that was the thing, is the finding help was very difficult.
Yeah, I can imagine, because then you're standing there and half the time you don't even know if you're losing your own mind, and because
right.
I know what it's like to like repeat something like that, and even as it's coming out of your mouth, you're thinking to yourself, this is insane. You know, I can't believe I'm saying this.
You're never going to believe what I have to tell you.
Yeah.
You know? And I did, I finally met up with a priest who was listening, and he understood what was happening. And, you know, he actually stepped out of what he should do, I guess, and he helped us without all of the rigmarole that you would need to go through normally,
right.
Which was great. And then we were fortunate enough to, we met a psychiatrist at the same time who believed in these things. You know, it was so strange. It's like we were given the right people at the right time, you know, to handle it. Because, you know, these things, you have to deal with the psychological, the medical, and the spiritual all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think a lot of people understand that.
It does attack on every level. So you have to fight on every level.
And everybody that is exposed to it. You know, everybody in the family, everybody in my family, you know, because we live there and we're exposed to it. The post-traumatic stress is just one of the things that you have to deal with.
Yeah, that's true. So what's the deal with this landlord? Do you think something's wrong with him? Is he possessed? I mean, why? How can he, in normal good conscience, be renting this out to to families, especially with? And it seems like he hones in for these families with children.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely children based. As a matter of fact, the very last email that I received from the landlord, it's in the book. It's in the very last chapter of the book. And it was horrible because it said, you know, I can hear the children playing upstairs, running around. The mother and father are going to have to stop them from doing that soon. And he goes, but I hear their little angel screams. And he goes, I hope their guardian angel is watching over them tonight. And at that point, it became so clear to me that, you know, this person really knew what they were doing. You know, and I wrote him back. I said, you know what? I said, God help you. I said, I don't want to hear from you ever again. Because at that point, I realized I was being toyed with. You know, so not only, you know, he was toying with me, he was toying with the families over and over and over again.
There is something wrong with him. I mean,
absolutely. Absolutely.
That is bad.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
I wonder if he's picking, like, families with young children, banking on the bright auras of these children to kind of feed the negativity?
Well, you know, that's actually very good because I think you're probably close to it. It's the energy from the children that feeds it. Because in each of the cases that we've seen, the children are the ones that are targeted first. In a lot of the book, I don't talk a lot about what the kids went through. I think, you know, there's going to be a time when they need to tell their side of it.
Yeah.
I wanted to leave it open, but the kids were so targeted in so many ways, it wasn't even funny. It seems like that is the goal. But also, now I work these cases.
Right.
You know, and I help families in this situation. We've also found that a lot of times these things will target the children, and the idea is at one point, what it's wanting is the parent to give over. And what I mean by that is they want the parent to say, you know, take me instead.
Right, which any Carmen parent
Reed.
Would do.
Right, Carmen Reed from The Haunting, Connecticut, a good friend of mine. Mm-hmm. At one point in her haunting, you know, they were taking her son away in a straitjacket. You know, she went into the house, sat downstairs, and said, take me. You know, and it did. You know, unfortunately, in my case, when it came to that point, I said, God help me. I don't know why I did. But, you know, and the thing is the kids were locked behind a door, and I couldn't get to them. I could hear my daughter screaming.
I know. When I read that in the book, my heart was in my throat. I'm like, that is like a parent's nightmare.
It's a parent's nightmare. Yeah, can you imagine? You know, and, you know, when I said, God help me, that door gave. You know, and I had been throwing my body against the door screaming, you know, help me. You know, after it was over, my whole right side was bruised. Top to bottom, and I'm a big guy. I mean, I'm a football player guy, you know, and I should have been taking that door down, and it was like a brick wall. Mm. It was like a brick wall, and I got to my daughter, and she was in shock, and I had to carry her out, and I made up my mind at that moment, you know, that not another child was going to go through that, and it's been a struggle.
Yeah, and at least you're out there now helping all these families that I just feel terrible as this landlord is just—he's purposely doing it. I mean, the place should just be burned to the ground to try and purify it, and maybe build something else up. But I mean,
our hope is that one of the tenants, and they're always afraid to let you come in because they're afraid you're going to stir it up even more.
Right.
Right now, this tenant, the last time they were spoke to, because there's a film crew doing a documentary on the house. And one of the cameramen stopped and talked to her, and she said she came home the other day and she found blood splattered on the wall. For no reason, didn't know where it came from. It was human blood. They called the police. We went to the police station. We talked to the police. The report was filed. It actually happened. You know, she says that, you know, a lot of the movement, she hears a lot of the screaming and the movement and all of it starting up again. You know, so, you know, but they're afraid if they bring someone in, it's going to stir it up. And the shame of it is I, you know, I have the resources now. I have an exorcist, you know, a bishop, you know,
that's
ready
great.
To go in and actually, you know, exorcise the property, exorcise the home in hopes to, you know, clear it out. But I can't do that without their permission.
No. No, that's true. You know, did they ever determine what the cause of this demonic activity is? I mean, was somebody dabbling in the occult at one point or a Ouija board? How
well,
did this get
you know,
opened or kicked
well,
off?
Well, it's, you know, there's questions that one of the tenants somewhere was playing with something they shouldn't have. There's a lot of reasons this place could be haunted. The property that the house is built on was the property of a Civil War, a captain. As a matter of fact, he was the first captain in the Civil War to start the Missouri Militia. You know, the house is actually built upon the spot that his slave quarters was built on, you know, which is interesting. So you got that, and then right about, you know, 2,000 feet from the house it's now a nursing home. But during the Civil War days, it was a Civil War infirmary. After that, it was the county poorhouse. Now, the county poorhouse, when people would die, they would bury them in a mass grave. The mass grave's about 300 feet from the front door of the house. So it could be that. You know, it's just, there's this treacherous past. You know, it could be a number of things.
Yeah. Are you still there? It's kind of
Yeah, I'm still there.
Okay.
Somebody trying to beep it. My phone goes constantly.
Okay.
We'll let them
It's
wait.
That time of year, you know.
Yeah.
As fast as I today I was, I actually had the landline up to my left ear and the cell phone listening to e-voice messages on my right ear while I was on hold on the left ear.
I know how it is, especially this time. It's, you know, and I don't hide my phone number or anything because, you know, the one thing that you have to be accessible.
Yeah.
You know, if people are coming to you. So, you know, I get crazy calls all the time. I get, you know, calls of people legitimately that need help. So.
And that's, you know, I was looking how you founded your group. Now, luckily, that was a nice thing out of this whole nightmare. A really good research team, Missouri Paranormal Research, came out of it. And I noticed that you said you try to invoke, like, a humanistic approach when you're investigating cases.
Right, you know,
that?
And the thing is I did, you know, I actually ended up leaving the group in July 2007, because it really became so research-focused that, you know, it became a problem when I was working a lot of the private cases, because the private cases started overwhelming us, you know, in that... You know, and so, you know, I felt bad when, you know, you have a team of, you know, 15 people in a location, and I'm screaming at them to shut down, you know, no more EVPs, no more nothing, because you don't want to poke sticks at something,
right.
You know, and I felt really bad, so we separated that way,
okay.
So I could do more of the private work. They're still doing very good work out there, though.
Yeah, I mean, they're research, so they're more into the whole research, you're more about the whole, almost like the counselor.
Yeah,
in.
You know, the thing is I never felt comfortable with the research name. You know, I never felt comfortable that way because, you know, there wasn't a whole lot to research there. I mean, you know, you read the story. You know, I went from hell to back, you know.
Right.
You know, the research part was you know, okay, but, you know, my heart was always going into where that family was afraid and helping them.
Right.
And it became so much more apparent that it became almost a driven cause, and it kind of frustrating with the research side of things, and that's kind of why we parted. You know, you don't hear a lot of, I don't put any of my cases out on the internet. You're not going to hear about them because, and the reason for that is these are very private things. You know, think of it this way. You know, the team, research team, everybody's got the same shirt on. You know how it goes. You know, that's the last thing these people want showing up at their house. You know, they want somebody that's going to quietly come in with a couple people and help them. You know, it's a very quiet thing.
Right.
You know, and you don't want it to be this massive thing. And, you know, and honestly, you know, the Paranormal Task Force had become so popular that it was hard to travel with them without people knowing who they were. You know, so that was part of it as well.
Yeah, I've had people when I've gotten calls or emails to come and do an investigation, and they've actually asked me outright, well, you don't pull up in a big van like Taps does with, like, NJGHS on the side,
sure.
do you? And I'm like, no, I don't have a sci-fi budget. I'm going to pull up in a Hyundai, you know? That's about it, you know?
Yeah, you know, so you got to, but you, you know, but that is a legitimate question.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
It really is, because a lot of that, it does happen.
And the one couple, they were getting ready to sell their home, and then her husband, he was like, I don't want these people coming in here. All our neighbors will know, they'll see these cars and stuff, and I told her, I said, we all have t-shirts, but you can barely see them because they're black, and we're coming at night, you know. It's usually
right.
cold here because it's the Northeast, so we'll have jackets on, and we all have, I mean, the back of my car has a banner that does say the website, but all it says is njghs.net, so you wouldn't
right.
know unless you looked it up that that's what it stood for. So I'm like, don't worry about it. We're very discreet. We come in. We're just going to do what we have to do and get out, you know.
Well, I found, too, that a lot of clergy are very hesitant to work with a team name.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that was another thing. They're always afraid that somebody is going to try to grandstand it. And, you know, and this is the type of thing you don't want to grandstand. You really don't.
No.
You know, you don't want to put it out there for public consumption. And, you know, there's you know, the people trying to understand these things is one thing. But, you know, to take a case where somebody is working on, you know, this family is terrified and putting that out there is a different story.
Now, how do you protect yourself? Like, you're putting yourself back in a position that I would have thought after what you went through, you'd just be like, moving forward, never looking back, see ya, you know?
Well, you know,
but you're going in to help these people. How do you protect yourself?
Well, it's a two-part answer. It's a good question, because the first, I remember walking out of the church with the priest, and, you know, the priest that we were working with, and he goes, Stephen, how is your work going with other people? And I told him, I said, Father, I said, I stopped that. And I said, it's just too much to take. And this was right after the Union case. And he patted me on the back, and he said, he goes, well, you know, God's not going to give you a third chance. And it really affected me what he said. In short, you know, so I went through a healing period, and I found myself doing the work again. And, you know, to protect myself, well, you know, I have a tremendous amount of faith that does it, you know. A tremendous amount of faith, and I use that. That's my protection. You know, I protect myself. I pray when I go in, I pray while I'm there, and I pray when I leave.
Right.
Now, does that mean it will never affect me again? No, it doesn't. I always take that chance. But I think, you know, I'm 43 years old. I'm an adult. You know, when you have a 7-year-old child that's being attacked by something like this, well, then, you know, let it take me. You know, I'm an adult. I've been through this. I think I can get through it again, hopefully. I pray I can. But, you know, where a child's affected, you know, there's a little bit difference there.
Oh, definitely. You know, their children just have that untarnished innocence, and they just, you know, and you never know. Sometimes the demonic can take on a pleasing form and,
absolutely.
You know, and fool the kid into trusting it, thinking it's another child and that it's a little imaginary playmate, and meanwhile it starts doing it.
And it turns on them, and,
yeah.
and it happens more times than you think. And you know, to see that child, you know, I've seen videos of children, you know, being terrorized. You know, a lot of times the investigators will go out, and you know, they'll come in. You know, when I really go into a case now, a lot of times investigators have already been there.
Right.
They know that I'm somebody they can call to help. So I usually go in after that. So you know, I'll see tapes and everything before I go in. And some of the things I've seen have been pretty horrible.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I remember this one. I was with a little boy that was on a video, and I got onto the team for it because they should have never done it. But you know, they were taping him while he was sleeping, and I saw his bed move. Something was on his bed, and I saw
wow.
him wake up and start screaming for mommy.
Oh.
And it was the most horrific thing I've ever seen in my life.
Oh.
You know. You know, so you gotta watch what you do as an investigator. You know, you remember you're playing with people's lives.
Right. Yeah, it's amazing when I was reading your book and I was thinking back to the time stuff we had happened in our house, my first husband and I. Our older son, he's 18 now, but he must have been, gosh, he was a little guy. Maybe about three or four. No, he's about four years old. And I remember we went through a period of where he would come into the bedroom or our room in the middle of the night and be crying. And I thought at first he had a bad dream, and I'd say, oh, what's wrong? But then he kept saying, the man, he keeps standing there, he's staring at me. And I didn't know what he was talking about. But then it kept happening, and it escalated to the point where he would be coming in screaming and lifting up his shirt and showing, look, he scratched my back.
My gosh.
And I would, oh, my God. So at first I thought, you know, I'm waking up my husband. I'm like, somebody broke in the house. Oh, my God.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, and he's running through the house to see who got in. I take the kid into the bathroom, and he's screaming, and I lift up his shirt. I don't see any marks on his back. I'm like, what's going on? So long story short, it turns out one night I'm working part-time to make some extra money in this New Age bookstore. And the owners had booked a psychic to come up from Washington, D.C., but he had nobody register for his class, and they forgot to tell him not to bother coming. So I'm working there that night, and he shows up, and I'm like, oh, my gosh. So I feel so bad. I end up having my husband drop off our son to my grandmother to spend the night. I take the psychic home with us, make dinner. We have a nice conversation, had our first past life regression. It was great. Put him in my son's room. Next morning, he gets up, and he proceeds to tell me about this visitor, that it took him two very strong attempts to finally get this visitor to go to the light, so to speak.
Right.
And he said, you know what its name is, don't you? And I said, yeah. And he goes, don't say it. He goes, that's how close he is to coming back. You can never say that name. And I said, all right,
yeah,
fine. Won't say it. And then he said, you know what's interesting is he had a wolf with him with glowing red eyes. And I said, wow, yeah. My son never mentioned that. But my son would always mention about this. The way he described this being, it's as if you picture Nosferatu. He said he was bald, he had pointy ears, and he had very long fingers with long fingernails that he kept clacking together. And if he wasn't clacking them, he swore that he was scratching his back with them.
Wow.
But he never mentioned the wolf, and I thought, okay. So this psychic leaves. A few weeks later, I put in a New Age CD, so I put my son in the bath, let him relax. The first track opens up with wolves howling, and I already had him in the tub. And I hear these wolves howling, and next thing I know, he's running out of the bathtub, soaking wet, into the living room, screaming, it's the wolf with the man, make it stop. And I hit stop on the CD player, and I'm grabbing him, trying to race him back into the tub. And I thought, oh, my gosh. And, like, so he did see the wolf. He just never thought to say anything till he heard the thing howling over the stereo. And it's at the
good... Did you ever get a chance, did you get to see the wolf?
No.
And it changed your life.
Ugh.
You know, it's in the book. You know, that's one of the things in the book that happened.
Right? When I read that, I thought, this is, it would just, that's why I couldn't put the book down, because it was, just, I was seeing so many similarities. And I remember when another psychic, she's famous here in Jersey, Jane Doherty, when she came to the house, and she went to walk into our son's bedroom, and she got like 2 feet in, and her stomach went out the way it does when she's in spirit energy. And she stopped dead in her tracks. She goes, I can't get any further into this room. It's repelling me. I'm like, what? She goes, it's repelling me. It's pushing me out. So she came back out. We went back down to the basement where, this is where we used to do the Ouija board, right under my son's bedroom. And
oh
as soon
God.
As she walked to that spot, boom, her stomach went out. She said, you've got an entire portal running right from here straight up through his room.
Oh, no.
She's like, you have to clean this out. And so she consulted with one of her mentors, and it took 6 months of heavy duty, faithfully, diligently cleaning every day, every night, spiritually, metaphysically, to get things put right, you know.
Right.
And you know, and it's all about saving the kid. I mean, it was, because I remember the one day, it was a beautiful sunny afternoon. I was sitting on my son's bed with him, reading him a story, and he got up and he just said, "Ah!" and he ran out of the room and he slammed the door. And I jumped off that bed and I ran to the door. I'm like, "Get me out of here!" And when I got out of the bedroom, I thought, what is wrong with me? I'm a grown woman. It's a sunny, beautiful day. I'm in a cute little toddler's room. It was all teals and aquas and little fishies everywhere. I'm like, how can I be afraid? And that's when I said, something's wrong with this room, you know. And I was still, you know, a greenie to all this. I had no idea what we had done. You know.
Well, you know, that's the thing. It's, you get into that situation. And, you know, you're dealing with things that you can't believe you're dealing with, and you don't know how to deal with it.
Mm.
We're not taught how to deal with these things, you know. You know, it's interesting you talk about the wolf because, you know, Helen was seeing the wolf at the end of her bed. Right. And she would, you know, I remember her telling me about it. She was saying, you know, I'm seeing this wolf, you know, and he had glowing yellow eyes. And, you know, I thought, well, you know, she's gone off the deep end. You know, I got to tell you, I really did. You know, I did not believe her. You know, so we were at the house one night, and it was like the whole front of the house lit up, and we went outside, and there was this it was smaller when I first saw it, but it was a wolf. And I went chasing it, because she said, that's the thing that's been in my room. And I went chasing it, and we went into an alley, and this thing turned on me. And it started growling at me, and its eyes were glowing. And I got to tell you, I mean, I went flat down on my hind end. I was clawing my way to get out of that alley. I've never been so scared in my life. You know, and it kind of grew on me, too. It was, you know, it seemed huge at that point.
Right.
And, you know, I got out of the alley, and I looked at her, and I said, you got to move. I said, is this the thing that was at the end of your bed? She said, yes. And I said, no, it's time to go. It was time to go. And it was about a week after that things really got bad.
That is, it's amazing, you know, that it does really happen. And I have to laugh when I hear these people say, oh, the Ouija board is just a game. I'm like, yep, that's what the marketing people will have you believe.
Right. Well, you know, I always tell people that we'll mess with that. You know, you don't want to tell them no. Because if you tell someone no, most adults, and it's a shame, but if you tell them no, they'll do it anyway. Mm-hmm. Just for the fact that you said, don't do that. You know, so I always tell people, you know, do what you want. You know, and if you want to play with something like that, go ahead and play with it. But you better be sure you can handle what comes out of it.
Mm-hmm.
The best way to tell somebody. You know, people respond to that better.
Yeah, when I was down doing a book signing on Saturday, and this young man strolled in. He wanted to buy a Ouija board, and as he was walking out all happy with his purchase, I gave him my card. I said, when you're done with that, give me a call. You're going to be glad you took this card.
Book signing, right. I have, you know, the book signings are incredible because you have an incredible amount of people that come up to you. Mm-hmm. You know, and a lot of times there's people that come up to you because they need help.
Right.
So those are wonderful things to do.
Well, Stephen, I thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me this evening. I know I could go on for hours with you and just this book and all this stuff, but
well,
I know I have to honor your time. I know it's very valuable, especially this time of year, so I do appreciate you coming out and chatting with me.
Oh, it's been great. It's been a great conversation.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We'll have to keep in touch. You know, I know we're on my
Absolutely.
Space, so. Hopefully I will finally get to meet you in person one of these days when we're out and about. So.
I hope so.
Yes, me too. All right, well, thank you so much and have a great Halloween.
Okay, happy Halloween to everyone.
All right, thanks. Good night.
All right, bye-bye.
If you're ready to take your ghost hunting to the next level, you're ready to be a certified paranormal investigator by the New Jersey Ghost Hunters Society. The certification includes 4 hours of hands-on, concentrated training by the NJGHS leaders at the most haunted prison in the United States, Eastern State Penitentiary, located in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. To participate, you must have all of your own equipment. Register online at the NJGHS.net website certification page. Costs are $125 for current members and $145 for non-members of the NJGHS who will receive their membership going forward. PayPal, MasterCard, and Visa are accepted. Upon completion of the course, submission of your report of findings, and achieving a total point score of 80 or better, you will receive your certificate and new certified paranormal investigator card from the NJGHS. All the details are on the certification page of the NJGHS.net website. So what are you waiting for? Take your hobby seriously. Become a certified paranormal investigator.
I'm Rosemary Ellen Guiley, author of many paranormal books, including the Encyclopedia of Ghosts and Spirits and the Encyclopedia of Witches, Witchcraft, and Wicca. And you're listening to The Deadline, podcast of the New Jersey Ghost Hunters Society.
Hey, welcome back. It's time for Haunted Trivia. Now, last week's Haunted Trivia, you were asked, according to the NJGHS.net website, what is the first protocol for investigating? The answer, never investigate outside in rain, snow, or humid/wet weather. Okay,
I couldn't have made it any easier. This week's Haunted Trivia has a skill level of not too hard. According to our protocols listed on the NJGHS.net site, what's a way of securing permission to investigate a cemetery or graveyard? Be the first person to email the correct answer to hauntedtrivia@njghs.net, and you'll win the DVD, The Order of the Alchemists, The Knights of Malta, and Cagliostro. This film reveals the true history of the Sovereign Military Order of Malta, and in doing so, we discover occult and sinister forces at play. Ooh. Hey, you know, it's a DVD. What the hell? So, I really, again, am very thankful that we had Stephen LaChance on. It was great getting to talk to him. What a nice, nice man. And
I'll take your word for it.
Well, yeah, you couldn't hear the conversation. You won't know till you actually put the show together. But very, very nice man, very well spoken, just amazing. And the work that he's doing to help other families going through those types of hauntings is, it's very, very noble. So I appreciate that. And, of course, I appreciate Brian Sant, the NJ.
Better.
Yeah, the NJGHS technician and producer of The Deadline.
Hail to the king, baby.
And our team leaders, Gregory and Sherry Irish and Dina Trico. And, of course, thanks to all of you for listening. Keep downloading. And before I forget, it's a new month, people. It's already November 7th when the show uploads. Make sure, if you haven't already, vote for the show on podcastalley.com. Our rating has really been total suck the past few months. I'm very disappointed, very stressed. So go to podcastalley.com and vote for our show.
The link will come hunt you down and kill you.
No, pummel you with a carrot, as my teacher used to say. It's a teacher.
Educator.
The link for Podcast Alley, right to where you would vote for The Deadline, is on our homepage of njghs.net. And it's also, if you scroll down on the Deadline page, there it is. Okay? PodcastAlley.com. So thanks for doing that, for voting, and for listening. Keep downloading the shows weekly, because at some point in life, you have to meet The Deadline.